Today is Inauguration Day, which means across the country, the state, and the region, politicians are being sworn into office. A whole new swath of senators, congressmen, and yes, mayors are beginning their first day on the job. In Oakland, it's the dawn of a new political era with a brand new mayor, former city councilwoman Libby Schaff. She won a decisive victory in November, easily defeating the incumbent mayor, Gene Kwan. Schaff takes the helm of a city undergoing major changes. With a surge of new residents brought by the Bay's tech industry, the next mayor of Oakland will have to balance between welcoming these new residents while attempting to safeguard the diversity that has for so long been the city's identity. The city's also in the middle of a national conversation about policing. Not only is it at the forefront of the Black Lives Matter movement, but the controversial Oakland Police Department is currently under the watch of a court-appointed monitor. And as of today, all this is Schaff's responsibility. The new mayor sat down with KALW's Ben Trefney, and he asked her how she was preparing for her new job.
You know, I love my city, and so I'm really excited to have the opportunity to promote Oakland, to talk about Oakland, to let the rest of the world see that exciting, beautiful, vital place that I've always known exists in my city. I'm really excited that it feels like the rest of the world is beginning to discover us as well.
But for you personally, do you feel like this is going to be a difficult thing to deal with, for your family to deal with? I mean, how do you prepare for that?
I have an incredibly supportive family, and I'm very lucky as an Oakland native to have my parents, my sister, you know, a big network of help that supports our family. And obviously, I will have to draw some boundaries because every now and then, you know, kids need their mom and no one else will do. That will be something that I will ask the residents of Oakland to understand from time to time. And often I'll pick the kids up from after school, get dinner started, get homework started, and then go to an event that night. But from 5 to 7, that's family time. So there are ways to carve out those moments. But yes, I fire up the laptop at 9 p.m. I schedule certain meetings, often with other working moms, at 9 p.m. We call it the third shift after your kids have gone to bed.
Do you think, you know, mentioning working moms, this is something that's, you know, come up with the book Lean In, for example. I think that there's, I don't know, how do you see differences between women and parents who are in public office, say, and men who might be in public office, if there's any difference at all from your perspective?
Well, listen, I'm happy to talk very bluntly about changes that need to be made in our public policy and in our workplaces to accommodate working mothers and working parents. Our country is just horrifically behind other industrialized nations as far as giving parents paid time off after they have children, allowing mothers the support to breastfeed. It is ridiculous where our country is, and I expect to be a very loud and strong voice to move not just the city of Oakland forward in this regard, but our whole nation.
What are some of the things that you might want to change? I mean, as mayor, you may be able to, whether it's by leading by example or maybe leading by policy within the city, what are some things you'd like to see done differently?
I think more flex time. I think, you know, for example, the city of Oakland doesn't even provide paid family leave, which any other worker in the state of California would get. But if you're in a certain unions, you don't get paid family leave as a city of Oakland employee. I think that's ridiculous. So just to make people aware that we need to parent, and that is something, particularly in the Bay Area, where most families have to have two working parents. You know, we have gone on from the days of Leave It to Beaver. You know, workplaces have got to accommodate that. And if they don't, they're missing out on a lot of, you know, brain capital that is going to be helping this economy.
Well, speaking of the economy, in March, there's going to be changes coming into Oakland with the minimum wage. And we're talking about a rise of about, I think, 36% change in what that minimum wage is going to be. So I think there are a lot of concerned businesses and nonprofits who spoke out during the election season about how they're going to manage that. And as mayor, what do you say to them?
You know, this was an issue I was very passionate about. I certainly lost a few friends over my very strong position in support of Measure FF, which was very successful at the ballot box and will be raising the minimum wage in Oakland to $12.25. Now, I did commit to really trying to work with vulnerable small businesses and our nonprofits to make sure that this transition is not unduly painful. I mean, it will be painful, but it is so worth it. I'm very pleased to have already been partnering with some foundations to bring in some unusual resources right now, learn lessons from cities like San Jose and San Francisco that have already made these adjustments. I do think that restaurants are going to require a particular look. The differential between what waiters earn and what kitchen staff earn is, many feel, is quite unfair. And so to re-examine how tips are used, I think, is fair game and is a very good discussion that we need to start having.
We're talking with Libby Schaff. She is the new mayor of Oakland. Oakland is a city that recently was determined to be the most diverse city in the United States. I mean, I think that it's quite a calling card for Oakland, and it's an impressive thing. And this is something that could be changing. I think that other cities like San Francisco, you know, the demographics are changing, and specifically around socioeconomics are changing. Now, in Oakland, you've said that promoting development and attracting businesses and growing the tax base are important means to strengthening city programs that support low-income people. But I think there's also a lot of concern about the potential for displacement. As people are moving in and maybe tax brackets rise, then people are forced to move out. And how do you see this overall? And then I'm interested in maybe what kind of programs you might be able to put into place that retain the diverse population of Oakland.
Well, the thing that I've been quoted as saying much more often is that Oakland cannot afford to sell its soul for growth. Our soul is far too beautiful. And I love talking about the secret sauce that is Oakland. Oakland is Oakland because of its diversity, because of its working class legacy and, you know, working class families, because of its gritty industrial nature, because of its status as the home of social movements, of passionate politics, of creative social entrepreneurs, because of our artists. That's what makes Oakland, Oakland, and that is the Oakland that I am hell-bent on preserving. Now, housing, that is something where I am deeply concerned, because as we look at the skyrocketing housing costs and rents, we have a problem. And while last year I was proud to lead this kind of effort to bring consensus around the best rent protections that Oakland families have ever seen since rent stabilization was put into place, it's not enough. And I am really focused on trying to identify where we have low-income families currently living and giving them the protection that they can stay where they are. I know a lot of focus in the past has been around building new affordable housing. We don't have time. We don't have enough time, and we don't have enough money to just focus on building new affordable housing. We've got to protect people where they are. And I think that we deserve, or we owe kind of Oaklanders the first shot at getting those protections, the people that are already living in our city.
Well, it's interesting because in Oakland, with the high cost of housing, the rising cost of housing, a lot of people, it seems, and this is a problem within the entire Bay Area. I mean, it's not just Oakland, but there are a lot of investors who are purchasing properties at whatever rate they can get it and waiting for those to appreciate and then selling, which ends up making a very unfair playing field, it seems, for single-family potential homeowners, for people who struggle to get that down payment together, that for investors is not necessarily as hard. Is there anything that could be done to change that? Because I know that investment is a big deal in Oakland.
That's another problem. You know, my initial focus is on lower-income people who are renters. That's my highest priority. I'm just straight up about that. The issue about first-time home buyers is also really important, and Oakland has made some tremendous strides around both preventing foreclosures, but also trying to use the housing stock that has been foreclosed on for better uses.
I mean, it sounds like this is something that's maybe not public information yet, but it does sound like Oakland is considering maybe getting into the market itself to help homeowners who are not part of the investment game.
Yes, absolutely.
I want to talk about something that really affected a lot of America during the end part of 2014, and that's the demonstrations that have taken place as a result of the grand jury decisions in the cases of Eric Garner, of Michael Brown, and issues of police relationships with community and concerns about police brutality. First off, as the essentially the boss of the police department, how do you see this when you're also obviously representing the interests of everybody in Oakland?
Yeah, our nation has a problem. And on one hand, it's exciting to see people rising up and really giving voice to the fact that our governmental institutions were created on racism. And when we look at the results of what our public systems are yielding, there is clear inequity. I am proud of our police department. Our police department has made tremendous gains in their reforms. And those have recently been recognized. Huge decreases in use of force, huge decreases in complaints and lawsuits being brought. One of the very first cities in the country to have widespread required use of body-worn cameras. And I want to recognize the new leadership in our police officers union. They actually have supported the use of cameras. They actually helped the administration really send the message that it's not just that you wear the camera, you've got to turn it on. And they have been a really good partner in sending the message to other departments that, you know what, the cameras are not just good for community trust. It's a two-way street. It really creates some honesty for both the public and the officers about what actually has happened in an interaction. So we have a lot more work to do here in Oakland, California, but I'm very proud of the work that we have done. Now, whether it's fortunate or not, I think we have become a place where people are protesting what is happening in this nation. And there are days where that is a burden, that we are the location for a national conversation, which I think we feel like we are a little bit ahead of the game in a lot of these areas. And it's been difficult because, as you know, there are, you know, anarchists, people that are really bent on destruction, hatred, and bias. Because obviously there's a difference between bias and racism, but bias against all police officers, hatred against all police officers, obviously is not serving the greater picture of understanding, respect, and humanity that we are supposed to be trying to achieve. And then the destruction, the toll that this is taking on our city as far as broken windows, businesses feeling like they can't operate in Oakland, and just the sheer amount of overtime that we are having to pay, not just police officers, but many city workers, is really draining our resources and distracting us from the much more important work at hand, which is fixing these basic issues, not just around police relations, but jobs, educational outcomes. Black lives matter, not just in how people relate to police, but in all these outcome areas. And we've got a lot of work to do. And I'd much rather be working on that than sweeping up broken glass.
What did you think of when Richmond Police Chief Chris Magnus held up that sign that said hashtag Black Lives Matter during the demonstration in Richmond? I mean, it's I think it's an interesting thing politically. And I'm curious as to what you thought of that.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. I'm a big fan of Chief Magnus. He's a great guy, an inspirational leader. I will say the one piece that's hard about that is that people, whether they are officially associated with that group, people that have been part of this particular protest have been extremely dangerous to our police officers. Our police officers have been consistently pelted with bricks, rocks, bottles. The first night of the protests back in November, one of our officers, his helmet was split in half and he was hospitalized with a concussion. If he hadn't been wearing a helmet, he would have died. And so I think that it's hard for police officers to see one of their own supporting the movement when there is some confusion about whether this true vitriolic hatred of police is part of the message of Black Lives Matter. For me, I separate them, but I can understand how some officers might not feel that way.
And for people who just don't trust the police department, what do you say to them, being able to see this from multiple perspectives and even insider perspectives as you can?
That if you believe that our world and our government should operate without bias, model that behavior. And let us get down to what creates bias. How do we train ourselves to not have it? And that includes, you know, bias against police. Obviously, we all are complicated people. And we do need to do a better job to both recruit, train, and support officers that truly are connected with community, that are respectful, and that are not biased. But we're never going to be successful if the community does not offer that same respect and lack of bias back.
That is Mayor of Oakland, Libby Schaaf. I'd like to continue talking about justice for a few questions here. And one question is, what do you plan to do to help Oakland improve on its policies for reentry of people who have been imprisoned? For example, would you support an ordinance to ban private employers from asking job applicants whether they've been convicted of a crime? I think that it's the ban the box concept. Some private employers like Target have voluntarily stopped already. And is that something that could be done across the board in Oakland?
So I'm really interested in what I think it's Connecticut has done, where they've done Ban the Box on a statewide basis, and they've created a statewide database that allows relevant checks to be run based on the type of work that is going to be done by that individual. And so if that individual clears that database, then the company has no liability if something happens. The issue of employer liability is one of these, like, you know, picky technical things that does create complications for a, you know, private sector ban the box law. And then there's, you know, always the argument of leveling the playing field. And that's why this is one of those things that would be wonderful to do at the statewide level. The city of Oakland has been very aggressive and will continue to be aggressive around Ban the Box. But I'll tell you a story. I met just a couple days ago with three gentlemen, one who had just served 8 years in prison, had only been out for a month. And he had been asked to put together his reentry plan, and he really wanted to go to Stockton. He had a relative there. He had a plan set up. And it was important for him in kind of starting a new life to not go back to where his old life was. And his application got rejected at the last minute. And every address that he gave got rejected. He was forced to go back to the very home, the very neighborhood where all his old associates, all his history was. And it put him in a constant state of fear and not at all prepared for success. And I believe that is something that we have got to change. I've approached our state senator, Lonnie Hancock, who chairs the Senate's Public Safety Committee. She's really interested in forming some legislation to address this problem. The young man's name is Emmett, and I hope we call it Emmett's Law, because we need our reentry people to succeed. And if we have senseless laws that prevent that. Shame on us.
And the recidivism rate's been standing at about 70% for a very long time. I think that anything that can be done to reduce that is in everybody's interest.
Absolutely. And then, you know, just keeping people out of jail in the first place is also the best way to reduce recidivism.
That's true. And there's no recidivism at all.
I'm also incredibly committed, particularly for young people, to just push more and more restorative justice, to really examine ourselves, harm, restitution in a way that is peaceful and community building. I want that to be Oakland's gift to the world.
Also, another question I've got is that in San Francisco, the city attorney's office has been used to often move forward a social justice agenda. So in some cases, they go after payday lenders or they join the Prop 8 case when that was prominent in the state Supreme Court. So as mayor, would you look for your city attorney to be a force for justice? And if so, how would you go about that?
So I'm a big supporter of our city attorney. Her name is Barbara Parker. Now, she's an independent elected city attorney, and so I cannot tell her what to do. But I think she and I are very aligned around issues like this. And she has used her office to pursue lots of things. Oakland has definitely tried to be in the forefront to support medical marijuana. That has been something that our city attorney's office has gotten involved with. We had landmark legislation to try and prevent predatory lending, and we fought for our law all the way to the California Supreme Court, where it was considered unconstitutional. And of course, you know, if the state of California had let us pass that law, this was, you know, 12 years ago. Oaklanders would have been in a lot better shape. And I feel like history demonstrated that we were in the right. So absolutely, I think that the strength of the government and a city attorney who truly represents the people is a great thing. And I'm a very happy partner of our city attorney, Barbara Parker.
Well, seeing as how Barbara Parker is independent, then she could take it under advisement. But what would you want to see her maybe take on that's a social justice issue?
The school to prison pipeline is something that just is a moral atrocity. And I'd like to see her take on that issue in a creative way. Our failure to provide adequate preschool for our children is something that just pulls at my heart. The fact that schools are funded based on attendance and not enrollment makes no sense to me and feels like it was designed to disadvantage cities like Oakland. The cost of public transportation, the cost of our public colleges, these are all things that really feel like they're designed to hold our most vulnerable populations back. And these are all areas that I think could use some creative women warriors fighting for them.